day, Catherine the Sutherland, the hype of Hollywood, Tia the Maurice.
There is definitely
a hype
in Hollywood.
In Hollywood.
gosh, where should we start? I'd like to start with before Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like just, I remember, okay, so when I was little, as you know, I said I was going to be an actress, singer, dancer, model, and a cashier.
I love the cashier. That part, just all these very, very extravagant,
and a cashier.
I love pressing those little buttons for some reason, and it's funny.
And I've been blessed to be able to do all of that, even the cashiering. I was the cashier at a pharmacy and at Wiener Schnitzels. Thank you.
Oh, did you eat a lot of Wiener Schnitzels?
I sure in the crappy dude did.
My kids like Wiener Schnitzel, not... No.
I loved Wiener Schnitzels, but I would tell my family not to go because where I used to work, one of the managers or a boyfriend, he was like a friend. I'm trying to remember if he was a man. He was a friend of like the owner or manager, whatever. This is disgusting.
Oh, no. What?
He would scratch his private parts and then make a hot dog. I was like, oh, heck no. Nah. I'd be like, mom and dad, don't be coming here. Don't come.
Yes. Just be scratching.
Oh no.
Yes.
No gloves?
Nope.
Nothing.
Nah.
Oh.
Nah.
I remember hearing a story about someone peeing in the beans at Taco Bell.
Oh.
Yeah, and then they had him on video. Oh, I'm sure there's all kinds of interesting.
Oh, I had a friend, I shouldn't say it was a friend, but it was a friend, who worked at Jack in the Box.
Oh.
She worked at Jack in the Box and she was one of the managers, actually. I believe she had gone up to management. And she would tell us stories about if you were rude in the line, she'd be like, oh, of course, sir. She told me about what I was like, I'm a dad. Don't go to that Jack in the Box. She was like, there was a guy that came through the drive-thru and he was a complete butthead.
Mm.
She was like, okay, sir. Yes, absolutely. I'll get your order right up. Took his bun, rolled it across the floor. A couple of times. She described everything. Rolled it across the floor a couple of times. Spit on it. Threw it into the trash. Took it out the trash. Rolled it again. Put everything else together.
He got a little extra special
sauce. That is disgusting.
That's terrible.
Disgusting. And I shouldn't even say that was my friend.
She was mad. Wow.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
Okay. I always think about that when I'm at restaurants. I'm like, I am going to be as kind and sweet as possible.
It's true.
I don't want any extras.
You don't know what's going on in the back kitchen. So you can only pray that your food's going to come out well. But that's not what we're talking about. Restaurants.
The hype of restaurants.
So I don't even know how I got into because I said
cashier.
I was a cashier as well.
At Wiener Schnitzel.
So I started performing in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
My audience were my parents.
Yes.
And my brothers. And I would watch the Carol Burnett show and I would force my older brother to do skits with me. We would watch the Fred Sanford show. He was Fred and I was Esther.
It was so fun.
Is that Sanford and Sons?
Sanford and Sons.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I loved that show.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We had so much fun.
It was so funny back then.
Yeah.
Like, there was some great comedy back then.
Yeah.
A lot of shows, I was thinking about that too, because everything is so sensitive now. There's so many things that I watched growing up. Like, I used to watch, did you have the Benny Hill show in America?
Yes.
I mean, chasing women around in scantily clad clothes, pinching their bottoms. I mean, and I thought it was so funny as a kid.
Yeah.
And it was very chauvinistic. Now I look back, I'm like, oh, that would not fly today.
Right. Right. There's a lot of things that wouldn't. But so I started performing skits and things like that. And, you know, I grew up in Stockton, California. There is no entertainment business in Stockton. The closest area would be like San Francisco, and that's still not a Los Angeles or New York. So I knew at a young age I was destined to come to Los Angeles.
But did you have anyone in your family that was in the entertainment industry?
Yes,
I did.
My uncles formed a band that was quite well known, especially overseas, called The Ninth Creation. And actually some of their music continues to be sampled today.
Wow.
It's been a few lawsuits because they've stolen some of their music. But yeah, my uncles started a band called The Ninth Creation. Funk, hip, I was going to say hip hop, wasn't hip hop. Funk, pop,
like Motown?
Yeah. Live instruments and all of that. And yeah, they've toured the world and all of that.
You had it in your blood.
I did. My dad sings too. But he wasn't a part of the band. It was just a couple of his brothers and then some of the brothers' friends. But yeah, so I always wanted to come to Los Angeles because I would watch on television Janet Jackson dancing and Michael Jackson, and I'd watch the awards and I'd be like, oh my gosh, I want to be there. I've got to be in the area, at least. I've got to be in LA. And so UCLA was the college of my dreams. Like I just, they were going to accept me whether they wanted to or not.
They'd be camping out. You will take me.
You will take me. And so in 92 was the first year that they were opening up their theater department to incoming freshmen, and they were only accepting 50 people. And I remember a friend of mine had already, she was a grade ahead of me. She was already at UCLA under a different major. And she was telling me how difficult it was going to be to get into UCLA. Just declare a different major, Nakia, and then you could switch over. And I remember vividly saying, you don't know who my God is. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to audition. They're going to accept me because God said it.
He told me.
I just had faith that the doors would open. And if they didn't, that God would provide a different way. Mm-hmm. And so I auditioned, and I remember I sang, I did a part from Dreamgirls. Mm-hmm. And I ended with the song, You'll Never Take My Dreams From Me. And I remember looking them in the eyes and just feeling so confident at that time, but not, you know, not really knowing if they're going to accept me or not. But I remember that big package came, my dad pulled it out, and he was excited. Like, okay, Kia, just calm down. We were running from the garage into the big, because they always said, if you get a big package, it's a yes. If it's a small letter, then it's a no. And I was like, it's a big package. And I remember we were running into the house and my parents surrounded me and I was opening it and it said, congratulations. And I just was so elated. And my second choice,
thinking about that, it's a big deal.
It was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge for me. And
it's like a whole transition in your life, like going from like Stockton's, it's a bigger town now, but it was a small town.
Yeah.
You know,
very small, small town. And, you know, my other option, just so that I could be near LA, was to go to UC Irvine because that was the next UC that was closer to LA, but that was never my dream.
Interesting. Imagine if that happened. Like, I wonder how your life would be different.
Right.
You always wonder, like, this movie Sliding Doors, remember? If you take just one thing changes, it can change your whole life.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. It's so true. It was at UCLA that I ended up my junior year. I had gotten a manager. I don't remember how I'd gotten the manager, Eric Menzies at the time. He no longer does management. But he had hooked me up with an agent. And I get this audition for Power Rangers. I had no idea what Power Rangers was. Mm-hmm. I was a junior in college. I really didn't watch a lot of television. I was too busy partying. I ain't even gonna lie. I was. But after my freshman year, because I'd gone on academic probation my freshman year, because I was partying just a little too much, and I had to have a come to Jesus moment where I was like, this is the school that you've always wanted to come to. You are not going to get yourself kicked out of this school. Because I actually had one of my good friends that I hung out with. She was expelled.
Really?
She was expelled.
What do you have to do to get expelled?
Not go to class.
She get bad grades.
No, she would like sleep in, and she was a very bright girl. She would sleep in, not go. Like, I don't know what her problem was, to be perfectly honest.
And then you've been in with your parents and you have all this freedom all of a sudden. I can see, like, oh, I don't have to go. No one's telling me I have to go. It's all on you. You have to be motivated.
Right. When you say that, let me just piggyback on that and say, I remember when my parents dropped me off, my mother was crying because I started during the summer to get, you know, acclimated to everything. My mom was crying and I felt bad because she was crying. But the moment they got into the car, I was like, I was so excited. I would be lying if I said that I wasn't. I was so excited to be on my own because I was such a sheltered child. I feel like I was a bit sheltered. I went out to parties and so forth, but I wasn't out like a lot of my friends. So this was like, oh my gosh, I get to be free and do whatever I want, wake up whenever I want. So my junior year, I did this audition for Power Rangers. I did not know what it was.
But I remember before that, I had auditioned for little things, for like music videos, and I did a couple music videos and things like that. And the whole audition process had become so overwhelming for me because I wasn't booking a lot, you know. And some of the things that I did book, it wasn't like a stepping stone to a career. It was like a music video or a small, oh my gosh, I did this commercial for the Psychic Network. I was one of, you know, reenacting one of the situations on the Psychic Network. And I remember really putting in my acting skills. And I was at, what was it? I just
were you the psychic?
I was not the psychic. I was one of the actors. And like, I'm trying to remember where it was, like, I worked in some, like a Dairy Queen or something. And I remember I had to put this apron on, and it was like an orange and white apron. But I think a criminal had come in there, and the psychic, I can't even remember what happened.
Predicted that you were going to get robbed.
No, it was like a reenactment of something that actually happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the psychic was the one that, I guess, caught the criminal.
Okay.
Or something like that. I don't even remember. It was funny once I look back. But that's the kind of work that I was getting.
Right.
So I remember when I had...
start somewhere.
Right. And I remember when I had my first audition for Power Rangers, I had decided my next audition... which happened to be the Power Rangers, I was just going to let it go. I was going to go in there, do what I needed to do, and I was going to literally just kind of let it go.
Mm-hmm.
That was my goal. So I remember I went in. I went in for the audition. I read the sides. I had to wear yellow. Didn't know anything about being the Yellow Ranger, nothing like that. They just wanted to see me in yellow. And I remember I went in. I read my sides for the casting director. And I remember going to my little Honda Prelude at the time. I opened my sunroof. And I threw the sides behind me. I remember vividly doing that. And I backed out and I went down the street and I didn't think anything about it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Was it different?
It was different. Yeah. And then I ended up getting the call back.
And were you surprised?
I was, because I was like, Yeah. And so then the second audition, the callback ended up becoming the third. And then the fourth, and then the screen test, and then the final interview.
Yeah.
And so that was my first experience on a television show, actually.
Yeah.
And I just remember being so excited and very appreciative. And I remember going on set 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning. I was still a student at the time. So trying to balance them both was truly the grace of God.
I know. I can't believe you did that. It was crazy.
Filming 5 days a week.
Yeah.
From
and still partying.
And still putting my party on. And going to school.
Yeah, that's...
It took me 4 years and one quarter to graduate, which I was very proud of myself. But
impressive.
That was my first experience. What about yours? What
so impressive, Kia, that you did that, though. Like, I remember thinking that at the time, like, and you, how you juggled it all. And you didn't live close to where we were filming either. You were driving from, like, you lived near school, right?
I lived in Westwood.
So she had, like, an hour drive to work, and we worked, 13-hour days, sometimes longer because we had ADR afterwards, sometimes weekends. So that's impressive.
Thank you.
And we'd sleep in the dressing rooms. Catch up on the sleep in the dressing rooms. My experience was different. I definitely had this major desire to be. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be an actress, a singer, a dancer, all the same things. Not a cashier.
Dang it.
Possibly a vet.
Okay.
I loved animals.
Okay.
But. I knew I was going to be an actress. So I started in elementary school doing school plays and musicals and things like that. I played the piano. And so I was always doing some kind of performing. And then I was in a group called the Johnny Young Talent Show, which was a show. It was like a talent show on television. And I was in like a performing, we used to perform in shopping centers and things like that. And Natalie Imbruglia and I were actually in the same group.
Wow.
She was, I knew her from a young age. She sang that song Torn.
Yeah, yeah.
I was at a very academic school and my dad was very like, you've got to get a good education. So I went to a very academic school, and when I got to eighth grade, I was like, I got to get the hell out of this school. I can't be here. It was really snooty, stuck up, very rich people. And I just didn't like, I was cliquey and I just didn't like the school at all. And so I had a whole presentation for my parents to go to this school called McDonough College, which was a performing arts high school in Sydney. And I wanted to go there so badly. And it was kind of like Juilliard, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had a whole presentation. My dad was not for it. My mom was a little bit more for it. But I said to them, you know, I will promise you I will get good grades. And it meant me moving to Sydney, which was an hour and a half from where we lived. So I would have probably had to be on the train. And like, there was a lot of factors involved. So I remember going to the interview. They said, all right, we'll go and meet with the principal. And we went, I just was like, oh my gosh, I have to go to the school. I have to go to the school. Because they incorporated the performing arts into the curriculum. So I got to dance and sing and act and do all of everything I ever wanted in school, like during school. So I went there. They agreed to it. So I went there from 9th to 12th grade. And it was the best experience because I actually went there as a dancer and ended up falling even more in love with musical theater and acting and kind of went more on that route. And my grades didn't go as well, sadly for my dad.
So you couldn't keep your promise of
I did not keep my promise. I mean, I was one of those kids that was a crammer. You know, I was not.
I can see that.
You can see that about me. You know your friend. That. I'm a bit of a procrastinator. It's true. So I would cram the night before and I had a photographic memory. So I got good grades. But when it comes to we call it a high school certificate in Australia. Okay. So in 12th grade, you do your exams like your SATs. And if you don't have all that information, it's not going to go so well, right? So my cramming did not go so well for my final grades. I regret that. However, okay. I left high school and
you graduated.
I graduated. Okay. Yes, I graduated fine. I didn't fail. I got average grades, but I was an intelligent kid and I should have done much better than I did. But it just wasn't important to me,
right.
You know? So I tell my kids all the time, I don't care if it's not important. You have to get an education. Mm-hmm. I really am annoyed at myself that I didn't put more effort into my school work. So I left high school and I was already working a little bit during high school. I did recitals and things like that. People would hire us for business dinners or weddings and things like that. I was in an a cappella group and then I was in a dance group as well. And so when I left school, it was really hard for me because it was all under one roof in high school. And then when you leave high school, I now had to find ways to make that all work. And it's expensive to take classes and stuff. So I ended up doing, I went to an acting school called Ensemble Acting Studios. And I was there and I started working. I was scouted on the street. I was coming out of the gym one day and a modeling agent was like, are you a model? And I was like, no, I did a little bit in high school. So he asked me to join his agency. And then I was scouted by another agency that had an acting division, a bigger agency called Cameron's. So I ended up going with them and started auditioning for commercials.
So did you leave the first agency to go to the second?
Yes, I was with the first agency for maybe 6 months.
Okay.
And then I switched over to Cameron's.
What made you switch?
They were a really big agency. I was with the first modeling agency I was with was called Spotlight, and they were strictly modeling. Like I was doing a lot of editorial stuff for them. But Cameron's, I knew, had an acting division, which was my passion, and they were just a bigger name. And
to just so our listeners can because I'm sure that this is really interesting to me, because some people sometimes they get scouted on the street, but it is not a true scout. So
right.
How did you know that these were true scouts?
Well, the Spotlight agency, he gave me his card. And he said, you know, I'd love to talk to you further. And I knew of the name.
Okay.
I knew the name. They were a reputable agency. And then when I met with him, he said, you know, I didn't have to pay him money. Like a lot of them do that.
Yeah.
A lot of agencies will say, you can give us money and we will find a photographer for you.
Right.
People spend thousands of dollars and it goes nowhere. Well, in this particular, they paid for my photo shoot. So
wow.
I know it was legitimate.
Okay.
So I did that. And then, but with Cameron's, you know, I already had a book cause I'd done some work. So when I went to Cameron's, they started sending me out for commercials. And then eventually once I kind of proved myself, I was working a lot. They were like, oh, you're in acting school. We'll send you out for some stuff. And so I started auditioning for just little like soaps and TV shows in Australia. And I'd only been doing that for a couple of months. I was doing a lot of theater. I was doing pantomime, which is, do you know what pantomime is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have that here in America?
Not a thing. Not that I'm aware of. But
okay.
Theater.
It's children's theater. Children's theater, basically. It's like musicals for kids. I was doing that. I was doing, you know, a lot of like theater work. But not doesn't pay a whole lot. You know,
right.
It's just for fun, really. But my audition for Power Rangers came only a couple of months into joining their acting division.
Wow.
And I didn't know what it was. I just heard children's show that's shooting in Hollywood. I was like, oh my gosh, I get to move to Hollywood. And they were like, yeah, it's like a series regular role. I was like, wow. So I auditioned, and my friend Rowan, I remember him helping me come up with a martial arts routine because I didn't know what I was doing. And he's like, lots of kicks and spins because you're a dancer. We'll be fine. So I had to do a martial arts routine and a scene. And then the callback was, again, I just did the scene this time because they knew I could do choreography. And then my third callback was with Shuki, the producer. And it was at a hotel. Interesting, because I've heard stories about that kind of thing.
So who was there besides him?
It was him. It was just him. I know. And there was five girls. There was five of us. And we all were blonde, blue-eyed, looked very similar. And there was a casting director there. There was a casting director. But I don't remember them being in there. Maybe they were.
Were your first auditions at this?
At the casting studio.
But
the third one was in at a, it was a, like a suite. Like he rented a suite at a hotel. It was like a conference suite.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a bedroom.
You're thinking like he's hotel laying room. There.
He's like in his robe. Oh, join me.
More for me, Dad.
No. It was like a conference room in a hotel. Which I've done that before from modeling. Like a lot of the times, like the Japanese companies and stuff would hire a conference room and you would go and meet there at the hotels because they were flying from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done auditions like that before. So it didn't seem alarming to me. And the casting director was there checking us in. I remember that, but she wasn't in the room. And I went in and it was like just basically sitting at a table and talking. Very casual. And he said, well, how do you feel about moving to Hollywood? And I was like, oh, it's my dream. I would love to. And when I left the room, I said to him, I hope you make the right decision, Mr. Levy.
What the heck? So stupid.
You got to. I was very confident. And I didn't hear anything for probably 3 weeks. And then him and the casting director called me personally.
Wow.
And he said, so you better start thinking about packing your bags. And I was like, what? Screaming. I had to move my whole life. Like I had no one when I came over here. I remember being on the plane and thinking, oh my gosh, my life is going to be completely different. You know, I went to the grocery store the first time. I was like, oh my gosh, there's about 200 cereals to choose from. It was really like a culture shock,
right?
Going to just everything was so different here.
I think this is going to end up being a part two.
We're going to go a part two. Yeah, we've got a lot to say.
Yeah, let's just keep going.
Yeah.
Let's just keep going. Keep going.
So, in addition to just a whole change in culture, the industry here was very different for me. Like, just the way when I left the show and started auditioning, it was a real shock for me of how it worked because – in Australia, everybody knows each other. There was only a handful of casting directors at the time, and it felt very supportive. But when I started auditioning here, it felt very competitive.
Mm.
And, you know, you walk into a room. I don't know if you have this experience, but when you walk into a room, especially for commercials, there's like a lot of people that look like you,
mm-hmm.
like because they're looking for a certain type.
Right.
And it was unsettling to me. I wasn't used to that because just with modeling and stuff, I remember just it was diverse. They weren't just looking for, occasionally they would say we want a blonde, but it was mostly like we want this type of body, you know, or this type of, yeah, it was different. And I just remember feeling really intimidated. And when I would walk in the room, I felt very, like sometimes they could care less if I was even there. That was just checking off a box. Like they'd already cast it. That's how it felt sometimes.
And you're probably right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things. I remember being at an audition, and this is part of hype, the hype of Hollywood, is you think that, you know, once you're on a series,
that your life is just going to take off right afterward. And that was just not the case for both of us.
No.
And just to, because you had mentioned that you thought that it was already cast. I had auditioned for, I was in the casting room. I was in the lobby waiting to audition for this Eddie Murphy movie. While we were sitting there waiting, Tammy Newton had just accepted the role.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't even get a chance to audition.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was like, so if you happen to, I don't think that for that particular audition that I had paid for a coach or anything like that. But if you happen to have paid for a coach, acting coaches are not cheap.
No.
$200 for, you know, a session. And then you go in there and you tell you can't even audition for it. Like,
yeah, that's awful.
Ridiculous.
That's
like,
awful.
Why don't you see if she's going to accept first? And then if she doesn't, then hold the audition.
Yeah.
Like, don't waste our time. But that's what Hollywood does.
Yeah.
And I feel you when you go to, because you've decided that you don't want to audition and you're not in the audition. What got you to that point?
Yeah, I just remember, you know, I had a manager who was very adamant about me not doing my Australian accent. And I have a bit of resentment about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not heavy resentment, but I do feel frustrated because I think that was something that made me different from all of those other girls. You know, I'm blonde, blue-eyed in California. There's 2,000 girls that look like me. I needed to be unique and be true to myself and who I am. And I could do an accent. So I could have walked in there and been Australian and then done an American accent.
Yeah.
But she felt like, no, they'll hear it. They won't think you're authentically American. You're going up for American roles. You need to be American from the moment you walk in. And I really took what she said and did that. And I think it made me not be in my body when I was in the room. Like, I felt like I wasn't being authentic. And so therefore I wasn't giving my best performance because I was being someone I wasn't.
Right.
And I was so impressionable at that age in my 20s. I just wasn't confident in who I was. And I thought, she knows better than me.
Right.
She's been in this industry a long time. She knows what she's doing. You know, I had some success after the show, and I just reached a point where I felt like it was hurting me to be, it wasn't bringing me joy anymore. I was feeling constantly insecure, constantly judging myself. I just did not like the audition process. I didn't like what it was, making me obsessive on myself about, for the wrong reasons. And the craft of acting was becoming second to that. And I love acting. I love being on set. I love everything about it. But the audition process is an actor's life. We spend much more time auditioning than we do working. And I didn't like that anymore. I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I stepped away and I started doing something that was very fulfilling to me. I started teaching gyrotonic. I started teaching, doing personal training. And it was like pouring back into people. Like, I'm focusing on someone other than myself. And that made me feel good. But I do miss acting, but I don't miss that.
I agree with the whole audition process.
Yeah.
That has, some people become, and that has been my prayer to God. I was like, Lord, I don't want to be a professional auditioner.
Yeah.
That is not my dream. That is not my goal. Can we please not make that me? Because I've definitely had many more auditions than bookings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the life of an actor.
Yeah.
But, you know, I take every audition and I think, you know, this could be the one. This could be the one that catapults. Because I remember when we were on Power Rangers, Friends was negotiating $1 million contract.
Yeah.
When we were making like 1% of what they were making. I remember thinking like, oh my gosh. And I always use them also as an example because I think, you know, a lot of the actors on that show were not known.
I think Courtney was, the others had done some things, but not, that was their big break.
Right.
It's just great chemistry.
And I love that show. And I felt like, and I still feel like it only takes one great job to catapult your career.
Yeah.
And it's just you deciding that you're going to wait around for however many years, however many months until that one job happens. You know, I've been blessed with work since Power Rangers, guest star, recurring, so forth, but I haven't had a series regular job. Well, I did in the animated world, but not in the television world, which is what I've been wanting.
Yeah.
So it's,
it continues to be a struggle. And when we say hype of Hollywood, a lot of people think that, you know, once you're on a series, your career takes off, or just being in Hollywood.
Or you're rich.
Yeah, you're
they assume.
Right, right. And yeah. that is a hype.
Yeah, that's the hard thing with Hollywood is that there is an image, like a fake it till you make it image that is going on. And people are not, I remember there was recently a story of a man who was working at Trader Joe's and he'd been on a show. And
he had been on Bill Cosby's show.
Right. And he was very successful and people were like, oh man, his life went downhill. And I was amazed at how people were bashing him. And I'm going, this man has to feed his family.
Right.
We have to have jobs. Like it is what it is. They have to support themselves in between jobs. And that's such a fake news. Sorry to use that term, but it is. It's fake. That actors struggle. They do. Most actors. There is a very small percentage of actors that are working consistently and you know, doing well. Like a small bucket.
I can speak about, you know, after Power Rangers, you know, I'm on Power Rangers. I was 20 when I booked the show, and I turned 21 when I started filming.
Yeah.
And I didn't know the first thing about saving. I didn't know the first thing about, you know, money management and stuff. So it's not like I was making a million or even close to a million. But the money that I was making, you know, was more than I had before. And so my manager actually helped me with, you know, setting up an account to save some money, which I was very grateful for. But when Power Rangers was over, that little nest egg that I had went through very quickly.
Of course.
I was like,
yeah.
What am I going to do now? Yeah. I didn't instantaneously have a job right after Power Rangers, which would have been an absolute blessing and, you know, is the norm for some people, some, you know, who have great agents and have relationships with shows. But I was with a small agency that didn't have those kind of relationships. So one thing I was really grateful for after Power Rangers was that I had my degree. I had my UCLA degree. Because my mother, when I booked Power Rangers, she was so excited. But one thing she said to me was, Kia, get your degree, get your BA.
Good job, Mama.
And because of that, I was able to substitute teach.
Yeah.
And with substitute teaching, you know, it accommodated my acting and auditions.
Yes.
But I had gotten to a point in substitute, and ended up doing it for 15 years.
I know.
That I ended up falling in love with a lot of my students. Like I wanted to be there for them because where I taught was in the inner city, and a lot of them did not have, positive role models, and they didn't have a parental figure in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they did have a parental figure, the mother or father was always working, so they were basically raising themselves. And so my experience as a substitute teacher, I, at one point, almost gave up acting to teach.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was fulfilling me more than acting. Just like you were saying, you felt you would look at yourself and you had really bad body image ideas of yourself. And so, you know, I went through things like that. I questioned my acting. I questioned my talent. I questioned
it's hard just to live in that just state of anxiety all the time.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But I loved it so much. I loved it so much. But when I got sick in 2007, I was still substitute teaching. In 2007, I was diagnosed with a lung disease called sarcoidosis. And with that, I was put on 10 different medications, literally. I went from taking no medicine to having my own pill box. And, you know, one of the medicines I had to take was a steroid called prednisone. And if anyone knows about prednisone will blow you up in a week.
And you don't sleep.
Either. And you do not sleep. Mm-hmm. And then
it's terrible.
Just to counteract the prednisone, you end up taking other medicines. And so, you know, my body's like fighting, I already have an autoimmune disease, and then my body's fighting against itself with the steroid. And so I was just not physically in a good place. I look like I ate myself. I look at pictures. I look like I literally ate myself. My face was so chubby. I was so puffy. And so I decided that I was going to give up acting And I was just going to teach because I was getting fulfillment out of that. I wasn't getting fulfillment out of acting anymore. There was no consistency. And, you know, I had gotten job offers from principals, taking over classrooms and so forth. So I was like, I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to get my teaching credential. So that's what I did. And the interesting thing about that is if it is not your calling, then the doors will not open.
So true.
So while I was that 15 years I was substitute teaching, I had gotten job offer after job offer to take over classrooms, to become a teacher there. So many offers. And I'd be like, no, I'm going to act. No, 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 no. And the moment that I decide that I'm going to teach, it's like God closed the door. It was like, nope, nope. I could not get a job to save my life. Mm. It was so interesting to me. And I remember asking the Lord specific things. I was like, Lord, if you want me to get back into acting, I just need this, that, and this to happen. And one day I was inside of one of the classrooms. I was at a preschool. I wasn't acting at the time.
Did you have an agent still?
I still had my agent, but I told them I was taking a break.
Mm-hmm.
So I still had the agency. I get a call from my old manager who said, you know, there was a woman, she had a really thick accent. She wanted to talk to you about a role in her movie.
Oh yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Yes. And I was like, say what now? And so she gave me, and the funny thing is I hadn't spoken to Dolores. Dolores was my manager, my old manager. I hadn't spoken to her in a while. And for her to be as honest enough to say, I'm going to call Nakia and I'm going to pass on this message. Cause she could have been like, whatever. She ain't my client anymore. I'm not going to pass on the information. So, I ended up calling this woman. She was actually South African. Her name was Joy Dickinson. She offered me a lead role in her movie that she had written, an independent feature that was going to be filming in Austin.
Was she a Power Ranger fan?
No, it wasn't even that. She had looked up for some reason, because I was wondering the same thing. Like, how, why, like me, out of all of the beautiful African-American actresses that you're searching for, why would you choose me? And I just feel like it was a divine appointment,
mm-hmm.
You know? And it was that, which was an answer to my prayer, because that was one of my ask of the Lord. I was like, I want to be offered a role without auditioning for it, which had never, well, had happened in the past, but not a television role. It was like I'd done like an infomercial and, mm-hmm. and different videos and stuff like that, informational videos and stuff like that. But I had never been offered a movie role or a television role just off the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the first time. And I remember telling you about it. I remember mm-hmm. telling my husband about it. And I accepted the role. I ended up going to Austin, Texas, filmed there for a month. I got it to fly back and forth. And that's what brought me back into the industry.
Yeah.
And so since then.
And you were really focused on getting your body healthy again. Like you were working out and eating clean and like taking care of yourself, like pouring back into yourself.
And just sitting here thinking about it, because we often think about, Lord, what about me? And you're waiting for your dreams to happen. You're waiting for things to happen when we forget what God has already done.
Mm.
The wonderful things that he has already done in our lives to show I am still here. Just wait. Just wait.
We're impatient.
Because when she had called me, I had just lost, because I had gained like 40 pounds being on that prednisone. Mm-hmm. I had just gone into remission and I had just lost, I think, almost all of the 40 pounds. So I was back down to my weight. If she would have called me a month or two before then, I did not look like myself. Mm-hmm. I was still on all of that medicine. I was still on prednisone. So it was a divine appointment, a divine time. And that just goes to say, just even sitting here, like, what is for you is for you. If you allow yourself to be in line with where God is taking you, mm-hmm. if you allow yourself to be open, for that, and you just don't say no, because we can block our own blessings. I could have been like, nah.
Uh-huh. Well, I had the antithesis of that happen. I had I'd worked with Vincent D'Onofrio in the cell.
Yes.
And remember, I had my thyroid condition and everything happened. Same thing happened to me. I blew up and got heavier and it was a difficult time. But during that time, I was not healthy. I got a call from a casting director saying Vincent wanted me to read for a short film that he was producing. And I hadn't spoken to him since I'd left, since we'd finished filming together. It'd been a couple of years. And I was so freaked out about it. Like, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to do it, but I felt like I had to. And I didn't look like myself. I was like, I was so stressed. It was a horrible, horrible experience. And I went in to read and I was just so out of my body. And it just was not meant. It was not meant to be. So there you go. It's like when something's right, everything comes together.
Yeah.
You know? And I felt like that so, like, all the doors shut for me. I was not meant to do it anymore. It was not right for me. And I always have felt that even there is other avenues for me to be creative.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it has to be to do with acting. And I've never completely shut the door, but I don't want to audition. That's just, I have no interest in going back to that world. Right. Yeah.
So you'll be blessed with work without auditioning. You have friends that have created projects that will open up doors for you, which is an absolute blessing, you know?
Yes, yes.
But there is such a hype of Hollywood, and that's why we titled this Hype of Hollywood, because people get this idea that all actors are this, or all actors or all opportunities are this, or all, we're not all rich.
Mm-mm.
And some of us that do have wealth did not necessarily come from acting,
mm-hmm.
came from other things that we've pursued.
Mm-hmm.
You don't automatically, you know, just because you're on a television series, every casting director doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You go in there and you have to prove yourself every single time.
Yes. Yes. And even, and particularly with Power Rangers too, it's a children's show where most people think we just have helmets on. So they didn't even think that we were, they're like, oh, you're stunt people. You know, they don't know that we're actors. So I think having to prove yourself even more, like sometimes they would be surprised that I could act, you know? So, so it's definitely a facade that needs to be, people need to know the truth and the light needs to be shed there.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I absolutely agree. But we'll have to come back to this.
Yeah. There's still a lot to share.
So much, so much more to share. But thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
Super Chat
with Kat and Kia.